June 4th, 2010, it's the Lullabot Podcast.
Lullabot Podcast.
Hello, everybody. It's Jeff Robbins back with another Lullabot Drupal podcast. This week, podcast number 85, we're going to talk about the new Lullabot.com. We did a redesign and a reworking of the site, and we thought it was interesting, and we thought maybe you would find it to be interesting as well. I'm here with members of the Lullabot team, including
Jared Bittner.
And
Jared Ponchot.
And
James Sansbury.
The new guys.
Yeah, two Jareds now.
Yes, we've got two Jareds. Oh, the name spacing on email addresses is like, you know, you get a Jared and you think, Jared at lullabot.com, and then you hire another Jared within mere months and think, oh, goodness, what have I done?
We got to go the corporate way and do the first letter, last name.
I know thing. I know. We've turned a corner at Lullabot. It's a sad, sad day. Although we've had two Jeffs for a long time.
Eaton, that's true, but Eaton's Eaton.
Eaton He's takes the Jeff. Eaton namespace. I know. I've totally trounced his first name. Oh, well. Yeah, so the new guys at Lullabot. We actually have a couple other new guys as well who aren't here. But you guys were some of the guys that helped us redo the website. We said, "Hey, come work for Lullabot." Oh, and by the way, we need a new damn website. and so you were stuck with that. So
it's actually kind of nice, you know, coming into a new company, getting to work on the internal stuff first, because you really get a feel for how they work together and, you know, how just everything already works.
Yeah,
before you actually start on client stuff.
I guess that's good before you're standing in front of a client saying, yep, with your coworker saying, that's not how we do it.
So how do you guys work? I have no idea.
I'm new here. Yeah, no, it was good because we needed a new website anyway as well. Yeah. Let me first, before we get too deep into it, mention a couple of things we've got coming up on the Lullabot events calendar, now that we have a Lullabot events calendar section on the website. The first is Drupal Module Development Deep Dive Week in Washington, D.C. We're doing an entire week of Drupal development, two back-to-back workshops. We're doing basic Drupal module development on July 12th and 13th. And then July 14th, 15th, and 16th, we're doing an advanced Drupal development workshop. You can sign up for either workshop individually or sign up for the whole week and completely transform yourself into a Drupal development superhero. That's in Washington, D.C., the week of July 12th. And Jeff, and I'm making air quotes, Eaton, last name Eaton, and Angie, and I'm making air quotes, Webchick, last name Byron, will be teaching that. Should be a good time. I always have fun at the Lullabot workshops. It's funny, someone had watched all of the Lullabot Learning Series videos. Was a big fan of those, and came to see some of the Lullabots speak at DrupalCon, and were shocked by how animated we are in person. the videos, if anybody's listening and they're not familiar with the videos, you can find out more information about the videos at store.lullabot.com. We have a whole series of Drupal training videos, and
which is also being redesigned right now.
yeah, they're challenging. It's very densely packed material and stuff, and we basically put people in front of a camera with lights and makeup on and say, "Okay, teach people about Drupal." And we've gotten a little bit more casual about it over time, but the first particular particularly the first videos were a little stiff. I'm not saying they're bad. They're actually very high quality, really good information, but the Lullabot personality doesn't quite come out in the same way that it does in the workshop. So
the first ones are the pre-makeup ones. So
yeah, that was. But we were like, we don't need to wear makeup, and then we watched it back, and we're like, oh my god, we look like corpses. It's already enough of a problem that we don't get out in the natural light enough, and then shine a light on this sort of skeleton of a human being. Oh well. Anyways, at least you know we can explain Drupal to people. We also have another couple of videos. Sort of one just came out, and another is coming out soon. We have a introduction to jQuery video that came out a few weeks ago. If you go quick right when you're listening to this podcast, I think you can still get it on the early release price. The DVD has come in, or will be coming in very soon, on the introduction to jQuery video. And when the DVD comes in, the download price goes up a little bit. And so you can buy that now, store.lullabot.com. And the next video that will be coming out is called jQuery and JavaScript in Drupal. So the introduction to jQuery video is just like it's not a Drupal specific video. It's our first non Drupal specific video, and then this new video is talking about using JavaScript in Drupal, and like the AJAX functionality that's built into Drupal, and sort of the APIs that are there for adding whiz bang excitement. I just think JavaScript is fun. When you can make things move around on the page, I like it. So, anyways, that video is coming out probably next week. So keep an eye out and get on the Lullabot mailing list if you're not already. And we'll let you know. All right. So, Lullabot.com. Goodness. So,
we got a lot of compliments on that. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It was nice. A nice way to start the new year. Or I guess we were into the new year a little bit. I feel like we started the project at the beginning of the new year. So, but the old site was, what can I say? Getting kind of old. I mean,
still Drupal 5.
Well, it was still Drupal 5. And I think there was a lot when we launched that site that we didn't know that we were going to do. We have two different podcasts that we do now. And we didn't know that we were going to use the website that way. We had sort of different types of, you know, over time, I think as you start to put content onto a website, you start figuring out how you're going to use it, right? I mean, for anybody that sat down with a client and you say, okay, well, you know, what do you want on your website? And they say, we don't know yet. You know, well, how are your users going to use the website? We don't know. We don't have any users yet. That's a challenge, trying to figure that out. I mean, the best you can do is speculate. And so it's always nice when we sit down with a client that has figured all that stuff out. It's like, oh, cool. Well, we can build this as you are using it, or as you want to use it. And then, of course, over time, as they continue to use it and they've got the new features and functionality, they find new ways to use it. And that was really where we were at, where we'd found all these new ways to use our website and things that we wanted to do with it. And things like selling videos and stuff like that was something that we didn't do before. We didn't have a store before. And so now we did, and we had this website, which was just kind of sitting around as we worked on all these great client projects. Our own website just sort of sat there. And so it was nice to kind of sit down and rethink it. I mean, we had some goals. We sat down initially, with our friend Karen McGrain, of Bond Art and Science. And Karen is an information architect, who actually helped us with the Buzzer project, and her resume includes redesigning the New York Times and stuff like that. So she's well credited, and we talked to her about the site and, you know, the fact that we had all this content, and we felt like it really wasn't easy to sort of navigate through all the different content that we had and stuff. And so she sat down and did us a bunch of wireframes that just kind of sat there for a while. We you know, got busy with other projects and didn't have the resources basically to attack it. And when Jared, we first met Jared Ponchot and James Sansbury, who were running a design company in Atlanta called Sprocket. We said, "Hey, you guys want to do our website? We've got this, you know, these wireframes that have just kind of been sitting around, and you know, we really are in desperate need of a redesign, and we just kind of tossed the wireframes at you. Where did things go for you and you guys, like, from that standpoint?"
Well, there was the initial point of, like, Lullabot contacting us and asking us to work on their website for them, where we were just basically spent a day or two just freaking out, I think.
in a good way or a bad way?
In a very good way.
Oh my God, they contacted us to do what?
Yeah. We kept checking the calendar to make sure it wasn't April 1st.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that we spent a fair bit of time on the phone with you during that early stages trying to get our hands around, like, what happened in the information architecture phase, that because Karen McGrain had done a lot of work with you to both think through the structure of the site and wireframe it a bit. And it was kind of like, you know, design is so tied to that, that it took us a little while just to kind of get our heads around that. And then that would became an iterative process, whereas we began to do the design and we started to look at our targets for when we wanted to get this thing done by. And, you know, a lot of people use the site and have been waiting a long time for a new site. So we started to then even more tweak things to say, okay, well, what can be phase two and how do we simplify it and all that. But that's my memory of the early phase.
Yeah. I mean, it's about having a lot of legacy content and legacy, I don't know, I mean, methods. Like, when we originally built lullabot.com, I think it was built on 4.6. And then we did a quick migration of 4.7 and eventually got to the previous site, which was 4.5. In each time doing, you know, minor redesign kinds of things and reworking the site and stuff like that. But a good example is, like, our CCK content types were created with, like, I don't even know, it was like the beta release of CCK, you know, 1.0, way, way, way back when. And the content naming scheme was different than it is now, and there was just a whole bunch of sort of workaround stuff back then that doesn't need to be worked around in the same way these days. And so I know when you guys sat down and started looking at the site from a development standpoint, there was a whole bunch of, like, WTF moments. Just a bunch of, like, why did you do this? And each time I would go to, you gotta understand, it was 2006 and we just had a different way of thinking back then, man.
What's the difference here between a story and an article and a blog post?
Yeah.
It was late at night, man, and I was thinking about it, man. There were only three people working for Lullabot, and I was, I don't know, anyways.
Yeah, I think user one was still Matt.
Yeah.
I think even though we've now figured out that both articles and blog entries are both part of Lullabot's blog, we at least understand the difference between the two now.
Did I successfully explain that?
Yeah.
Yes.
I still wasn't sure. I knew that I'd done a lot of talking, but I wasn't sure if I'd actually explained it. So let's talk about the site that we ended up with. I mean, obviously, everybody can go take a look at it. It's at lullabot.com, and there it is. And one of the things that we did was we kind of went to more of what I'm calling sort of a landing page concept. I mean, from an information architecture standpoint, it's like we just had a lot of content. I mean, articles and podcasts and video posts and blog posts and workshops and all this kind of stuff from over the years that obviously, you know, needed to still be there. But we didn't want to sort of barrage people with this giant list of what's called oftentimes, at least in the Drupal community, is the river of news, you know, sort of blog style presentation of the homepage. We had things that we wanted to feature on the site from a marketing standpoint. I mean, there's stuff that we do. Workshops, as we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you know, with stuff we want to get the word out about, and our consulting and development work and stuff like that, and our videos, and so we wanted a good sort of showcase for that stuff on the homepage. So we went to this sort of more of a showcase kind of homepage with this, what are we calling it? A rotator, JavaScript
yeah.
thing at the top of the homepage.
Yep.
Yep.
Uses,
a rotator.
Uses a jQuery cycle and views rotator module.
And, so if people want to, because I know that we've had a fair amount of people who've come to the site, and they say, hey, that's cool. How'd you do that? So people should look at Vue's rotator module for how to do that kind of a thing?
Yeah, in fact, I think the Vue's rotator module that we're using is kind of a old forked version of it that we used in Sprocket. So it won't be the exact same. It just had we had switched out some of the options because I think the Vue's rotator module that you get out of the box adds some extra options for, you know, navigation and stuff that we wanted to control that a little differently at Sprocket because we had kind of a consistent way that we were doing navigation and it looks, you know, a lot like what you see on the homepage of lullabot.com where you have the little circles there of the different pages of the rotator. So, but
yeah, that's become sort of a what we call a design pattern over time that you kind of see throughout the web, these little dots, or sometimes they're numbers, sort of indicating the different. You can click on them and jump to one of the specific things, or roll over yep. and have it slow down so you can actually read what it's saying as it goes by. Stuff
it's
like
the
that.
New, I think it's the new Flash front page.
Yeah, this is yeah.
No.
Don't use Flash, use HTML5, but, you know, make it rotate.
Well, you don't even need to. I mean, this is just JavaScript, and it, but it still yep. feels sort of flashy, yeah. I'm always surprised when I go to the new lullabot.com site on the iPhone or on the iPad, and it works and looks pretty much just the same and does its own little animation stuff, and I feel like, oh, good, we did it right. and then below that we have what are we calling these, the pillars, sort of the linking off to the different sections of the site and the different things that we do that we wanted to focus on the site, and I'll just sort of jump through the rest of the page here and then sort of ask some questions that I'm guessing people have, or we've been asked. So down the bottom, then we have this section called the Lullabeat, which is sort of this river of news kind of thing, although it formats a little bit differently, and we're actually still kind of tweaking this aspect of the site. But basically, this is where content on the site can get sort of featured up, bubble up to the homepage, so that people can come and see, hey, what's the latest stuff that's going on. And then we've got events. Oh, goodness. I'm setting a bad precedent. We're going to suck on an audio podcast to go through and point to mention everything. And you can see right here. And then we've got the Twitter stuff happening on the right-hand side, which basically aggregates people talking about Lullabot on Twitter. So if you go right now listening to the podcast and tweet about Lullabot or listening to the podcast or that kind of thing, you may very well have your tweet show right up there on the homepage of lullabot.com. And so looking at this page, and again, as we were thinking about like trying to, so on the old site, goodness, I wish I had the old site sitting up here next to me. Like you would click and go right into things. There was like, the podcast page was just a listing of the podcasts, and we're adding a new layer, what I'm calling these landing pages. So now we have the ideas page, which then in turn lists things like blogs and podcasts and videos separately. So it is kind of an extra click to get down into things, but it also keeps the individual pages from being so overwhelming on their own. And can give a little more focus to things like our services page, which is obviously, once again, from a marketing standpoint, you know, we want to allow people to find us and figure out what we do and hire us and keep paying us money just so that we can do more podcasts. It all feeds into the podcast, that what we really want to do. And, So with this, the thinking, for me, as I started looking at it, it was like, do we want to use panels? Because panels is something that sort of is thought of as conventionally being able to create these landing pages, right? Just pages that are sort of made up of blocks or little aggregations of block-like content. But ultimately, we decided not to do that. do you guys want to talk about that decision?
Yeah, I think that this kind of goes back to, you know, when Sprocket kind of got pulled into the project, and Jared and I were first working on it. It was a little tricky at first working because we, you know, me especially, I was like, what is my role going to be in this? Because, you know, they've got Jeff Eaton and they've got Nate Haug, and you know, they've got all these, they've got Angie, you know, and all these awesome developers, like, so who am I to come in and say, well, I think we should do it this way? So that was kind of a rub at the beginning, I think, for me, of just being like, well, you know, we use context for all of our sites to kind of do that same, you know, what panels would achieve probably. You know, and so this is just what we were used to, and I was a little hesitant and wary of learning panels for this. So I think, you know, when we first got working on it, I remember hearing that there was work on, you know, well, we tinkered around with panels for it. So, you know, if we want to go that way, and, you know, it was a little, I was just concerned about it, like, well, man, am I going to have to learn panels to do this site? This is going to be intense.
Yeah, I think basically when we started out, Dave and I had been hired first, and Sprocket, we heard that you guys were going to start working on the project, and we were like, oh, that's awesome, because they have an awesome website, and we love those guys. And when it came down to it, we started working on so many different projects all at once, and you guys were the point guys for lullabot.com. You know, James would come to us and be like, so what do you think about this module? Should we use this? And we're just like, yeah, man, go ahead. You just do it, because you're the one doing the work. You know? And then you can show us what you did, and, you know, we knew we were going to understand it. So it was good. And that was great, because I had been wanting personally to use context and features more, and I was like, this is the perfect excuse, because if James comes in and he puts everything in context and features and all this stuff that, you know, basically DevSeed has been working on, we're all going to have to learn it, and I was happy.
Well, let's step back for a second and kind of define some of these things. So, So I'm assuming that most people who are familiar with the podcast are at least generally familiar with panels, and you can get a lot of visual examples of that throughout the web, but particularly on the panels page at drupal.org/project/panels, but And so Earl Miles, who wrote Views, also wrote Panels, and Jared Bittner and Dave Burns used to work at Sony with Earl on the projects that Earl was writing Panels for, basically, right, Jared?
Yeah, so we were working a lot on the multi-site artist platform, and he was coming up with Panels as a way to lay out all these sites in a very quick manner and
to allow administrators, right, to just quickly rearrange.
Not even administrators, more for developers to actually lay something out quickly and have uniform things, but also to allow administrators a good UI if they wanted to switch something, and they wouldn't have to go back to the developer to say, I want this block in a completely different place. They could, you know, do that very, very easily themselves. So those were a lot of his goals, and why it has such a really great UI that just kind of makes sense once you get to the part where you're actually moving things around. And there's really a lot of powerful things that you can do with it, and we know how to use it because of using it for so long. So, you know, many times when we just sit down to a new project, we say, hey, we're going to install Panels. It's just one of the normal things to do. And, you know, now that we have some experience with context, we find that there are places that context is the right solution, and there's places that Panels is the right solution.
So let's define context, because context does not, on its surface, when you first sit down with it, does not feel at all like Panels. You know, we sort of say, oh, you're going to go with context, or you're going to go with Panels. But context is like a replacement to the block placement system.
That's one part of it, I think. And that's probably a large part of what it's used for. But so context module basically is just a kind of a condition and reaction system. So if this is going on, do this thing, basically.
And it's not even always blocks, is it?
No, it's not always blocks.
Which,
like, you can say,
just blows my mind.
Yeah. You know, for instance, if you click on the ideas section and you go down and you drill down to any particular item, you know, if you click on one of the articles or something, you'll notice that the ideas menu item up at the top is always active. And that's something that context is doing. Context is saying, okay, you know, if you're on a node of this type, make the ideas menu tab be active. And then show these blocks in the sidebar, or, you know, and then you see up at the top where it says Lullabot ideas, and it says we know stuff, we empower you to know stuff too. That's actually, context is doing that as well. So basically, anytime you're in the ideas section of the site, this is going to be the context subtitle and description and stuff. So it's daunting at first. I think actually the new, we're using the three branch of context, 3.x branch of context, which actually the UI for it is a lot simpler. If you've been using the two branch before, when you first open it up, you're like, oh my goodness, what am I doing?
That must have been when I first checked it out.
It was daunting at first, and I think the scariest thing for me was the whole namespacing thing up at the top. You had a attribute and namespace and I forget what the other, value, I think, was the third thing. And for someone just coming into it, you were like, what are these things?
If I put the wrong thing in here, is that going to blow anything up? Yeah. I don't know what to do.
But the new one is very simple. You know, it's really easy to understand. You just have conditions and reactions, and you just have a name for your context. And so you set up your conditions. For instance, a condition would be, you know, like we were mentioning before, I'm on this node of this type. That will fire off this context. And then your reaction would be, okay, you know, make the ideas menu tab be active and put these three blocks in the sidebar.
I think that's why it gets compared to as like an upgrade to the block system as well, because you know when you go and you configure a block, you have the role options right there. You know, only show this block if the user has this role, and then the also the path options there when you configure a block, and you can do these same exact things with context. So it's actually pretty easy to take an existing site that has all these blocks and convert it to use context, because those same techniques apply with context. You can do the same thing. You say, I want, you know, when I'm at this path, I want these blocks to show up.
Or it's reverse, though. It's interesting. I was thinking about it, because with the blocks, you go into a block and you say, when I'm at this, you know, you go into each block individually and say, show it here, show it here, show it here. And with context, you say, at this path or this, you know, this path, show these blocks. Mm-hmm. And so the logic is actually reverse. You get the same thing, but with context, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but with context, you could actually have the same block in the right-hand navigation, or on the, you know, right-hand sidebar on these pages, and the left-hand sidebar on these pages, and the footer on these pages, or even technically multiple places at the same time.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I think somebody described it one time as a difference between like a push and a pull.
Right.
Which maybe that's a little confusing, but it kind of makes sense as well. I'm not sure how to explain it though.
Yeah. We're having a debate about whether the performance might actually be better. I don't even want to get into that, but rather than querying each and every block that might be available and checking to see if you might show it on that page, instead just saying what context are we? Okay, what do we do? You know, you're doing essentially one query rather than a whole bunch. But again, I don't want to, I'm sure someone will correct me on this, but yeah. So anyways, so we went with context for that stuff, and that's been interesting, interesting to do new ways of adding things. And then also sort of the possibilities of it are interesting as well. Being able to create contexts like taxonomy terms on a given node, and you know, showing things in the sidebar that are appropriate to that kind of a thing.
I think it's important to note that like it wasn't as though we came in and said, okay, we're going to build a site and we want to use one of these two modules. Like to bring it back to design, like design is all about problem solving. And the problem we were trying to solve is that Lullabot over time has built up a lot of stuff. And there, you know, the original Lullabot site sort of grew organically over time and then had difficulty sort of figuring out ways to silo that. And so there was just lots of different things, maybe not hugely accessible to the visitors because there were just too much. So there was in the redesign process, you know, the problem we were trying to solve was sort of how do we begin siloing content, and then how do we take all those silos and then break them down contextually and say here we have like sort of a context for this type of data and this type of these types of nodes and these types of views and whatnot, and so context, even just by its very name, kind of fits that problem really well. Where, from what I understand, I don't have a lot of experience with panels, but panels fits a problem, like a different problem, really well. We weren't necessarily looking for rapid, major layout changes to be happening within each context. We were sort of looking for a way to really structure and create user interface consistency within each context so that people could quickly and easily know where to go. And context really helps that.
And then another nice thing about it is that contexts can be exported and put into code. You know, which was not something that was so easy to do with the normal block system. which is another differentiation. And I guess even to step back, we can talk a little bit about features as well, which seems to go hand in hand with this. But to even step back a little bit more, we were talking about a redesign of the site, but it wasn't just a redesign. It was really a reworking of the site. And initially, I sat down initially and started doing some theming based on some early design sketches that we'd put together. And what I realized really quickly was that, like, this isn't just a theming project that we're talking about here. I mean, we weren't just going to slap a new look and feel on the site, or maybe we were going to slap a new look, but we were going to change out the feel and where things were, change the navigation, change the structure, sort of the way that things worked and stuff like that. And doing that on an existing live site is an interesting challenge. I know several points during the process just sort of brought up mostly as a joke, but you know, it was like, well, why don't we just take the site down for a few weeks? And then, you know, like, let's just take it down and just rearrange everything. And then, you know, we'll have to check it in Internet Explorer eventually, you know, and put it back up, you know, people will be patient about that. They can do without a podcast for a few weeks. But we ended up the process of trying to figure out a way to essentially sort of do this migration, a new deployment of the new site in a very streamlined way, is something actually that all you guys have had almost more experience than certainly than I have, on this. At Sony, you guys were doing this a lot, right? I mean, how do you, when you've got 150 artists' websites, including Britney.com and JenniferLopez.com and Ozzy.com, you know, and you need to upgrade them from one version of Drupal to another, or you've got a new way that you want to do the calendars on all the sites, or something like that, you don't open them all up individually and you know, click, 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 click for 20 minutes on each side.
Yeah, totally. And this is stuff that we actually learned from the Lullabots. You know, it was when I first started at Sony, you guys were helping us build this platform. And so the process of just doing development and then moving it to a staging environment where, you know, various people can just look at it and kind of sign off on it so that you can just, you know, push it to the production site. You know, that whole process is something that it's a huge problem for a lot of people. You know, you start out with just a blog most of the time and you're like, oh, I just want to change the theme. And you just go to the live site and you click a button and you're done. But when you get a huge site where you have tons of traffic and people like depending on this for, you know, their department revenue, you can't just flick switches and hope that it's okay. You know, it has to go through a really tightly controlled QA process. And so I think that was a huge paradigm shift even within Lullabot, was the fact that, you know, some of these internal projects, like the main website, we need to treat them like it's an actual client. Like this is, we would treat this development process just like we would treat a Sony's development process, and kind of shifting that mindset for some people within Lullabot was a little bit of a, oh yeah, that we do have to do that, you know.
By some people you mean me.
I wasn't going to mention any names.
It's like, but people pay us to work on those other sites. Let's just do this quick before we can think about it. Yeah, no, it was, I mean, it was good. And also, like you said, as we were starting off some new people and stuff, it was a great opportunity to get this stuff right. Yes. And so another part of that, as we keep alluding to, is using features. Anybody want to explain what features and the features module is? I do believe we've explained it on a previous podcast, but let's refresh people.
Sure. So the features module itself is basically there's a bunch of videos around that you can watch that kind of explain the concept. But basically, the guys at Development Seed were approaching this problem while working on Atrium of they've got kind of what's been referred to as glue code, or there's other terms like a wrapper module to just kind of encapsulate in code functionality, Drupal functionality. So for instance, like a blog feature, a blog, would be in Drupal terms would be a node type of blog. A view that would probably be, a blog view that just lists each blog item, and maybe some other CCK fields on the node type. For instance, you might have like a subtitle field on that, and then maybe there'd be a context as well, so that whenever you were on any blog item, that main parent blog menu item would be active. And so, while approaching that problem, they came up with this idea of, well, maybe we can make a module that will kind of be able to export all these different components into one module for you, instead of, at the time, they were doing it all kind of manually, and at the time as well, I was doing a lot of it manually. So when I think it was in DC at DrupalCon DC, they had a presentation on a paradigm for reusable features or something along those lines, and
something heady like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I came out of it with just freaking out and so excited. And then it wasn't a week later that they had released the features module that actually, oh look, you can just go in and point click and export things into a module. And so this really helped us while working, especially in the working as a team and stuff. All of us kind of having our own local setup of the site and being able to develop and stuff, is that we can, work on a section of the site and export it into a feature, get it in code, and then if it's in if the code is in revision control, everyone can kind of be on the same page with it, which was just tremendously helpful.
Yeah.
And it made the process go so much faster.
Yeah, Drupal has sort of over time sort of morphed into having a lot of these what I call meta modules. Initially the motif, the paradigm, if you will, was if you wanted a module that did something like, well, blogs, maybe not the best example because there's a module that does that in code, but let's say a hook
form alter.
Yeah, form alter to change the way that your comment form looks or something like that, right? You had to create a whole module for a feature, and now these days with CCK and views, and there are other modules that are starting to sort of emerge in this realm of what I call meta modules that sort of create their own, almost their own programming system. In CCK, you're creating database models, and in views, you're creating essentially queries, database queries, and presentation models around that. And so you don't need to write some of these modules that you needed to write in the past. You can create them in code, but then you don't have a module. You don't have a way of saying like, oh, I've encapsulated this functionality, this feature, and I can't move it over from one site to the other. So over time, Views created an export system where you could store views in code, and you can get views that come with other modules, or you can create modules that implement a view, that create a view that lives in code. And some of this has happened around CCK as well. And now it's happening more and more, this sort of idea of being able to export configuration stuff in order to be able to put it into code. And what's the real advantage of putting it into code?
Well, I think even before that, I mean, quite typically, when you had a project, your project had a site module. Like, this is the module for the site, which houses any of your exported stuff.
Your glue code.
And, yeah, any of your glue code, any of your exports, your hook form alters, any of that stuff. This is my custom module for this site, and it does X. And now with features, it really changes that mindset. You can actually encapsulate certain features of your site, like sections of your site, into features. And that houses, this feature is the homepage feature, maybe. And it houses all of the views and blocks that are on this thing. And when Earl came out with CTools, which is just a library behind a lot of the modules that he is writing, it's a common library that, like, you know, Panels is using, Boxes is using it now. There's all different kinds of really good code that's in there. But one of the main portions of it is the exportables. And so he's come up with a uniform way that modules can implement exportable stuff. So whatever your module deals with, you can add some stuff to it, and it will use this API within CTools in order to export its objects into code. And features can give you a uniform way to get all of that stuff that can be exported into a certain module, into a feature, without actually even having to write any code. Which, and then, like, just the whole updating process, and it's freaking amazing. I mean, that is really the paradigm shift right there.
Otherwise it's stored in the database, and yeah, it's pretty close to impossible to do a diff and you know, create a patch from a database, right, to migrate part of your database over to the live site without migrating the rest of it. And so by getting the code into a feature, or by getting the functionality into a feature and into code, then we can put it into revision control and use a lot of that, you know, the real sort of tried and true methods of rolling out code from one site to another. And you can do a diff, and you can do a patch, and all that kind of stuff, although you don't really need to do patches exactly. But using revision control, I can check it in on my local host, check it out on the development server, check it with everybody else there, make sure that it looks okay, and then go and check it out on the live site, and we've got it. And if for some reason it's not working on the live site, I can roll back.
I think that's the big advantage right there. If you've got something that you've been working on for a while, and then if you all of a sudden accidentally delete something, or, you know, if you're working on a view, for instance, and you accidentally delete one of the displays or something, and maybe you spent 3 hours working on that display, and for some reason you just
I've never done that.
That doesn't
not that I will admit
I,
not that I will
only
admit.
Speak from experience. So, you know, getting it into code and committing incrementally as you work on a particular view allows you to be able to, oh, you know what, you know, I did this and it's broken now. Let me just roll back to where it was before and start from there, right, and continue working.
Yeah, and so features sort of acts as a hub for that. And there's some cool stuff that you can do with things like variable set, variable get. I'm now speaking. I'm speaking in PHP. But basically, what do we call them? Settings in Drupal. There's a table, the variables table, you know, there's a sort of a central place that a lot of the settings for modules and node content types and stuff like that, you know, whether a good example would be whether comments are enabled by default on this content type is stored in a very specific place in the database. And there's a feature, but this is where we get into some confusing names. There's a feature that comes with the features module, where you can, what's called strong arm a variable, basically to set the variable. And so when you create a feature, you can even associate with it certain things like here we're creating a content type and you should not have comments enabled by default on this content type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's worth noting with strong arm, that seems to be what people understand right off the bat and are amazed by, because everybody who does any sort of Drupal development is in there pointing and clicking and changing settings. You know, when you change the settings of a module, you can actually use strong arm to save that setting into code. So that if somebody goes in and changes something by default, you can go back to what's in code.
That's why it's called strong arm, because if someone changes it, you can strong arm them. You don't change the settings.
Yes. And features gives you a way to encapsulate that as well. So it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty much my favorite.
Features is your favorite?
Yeah.
Right now, I'm like on this huge feature kick because it's just made my development process so much more streamlined. That it's incredible. I'm writing up a blog post or an article on it right now that's really extensive, that I think people will really kind of get why I'm so ecstatic about it.
Yeah, and the other nice thing about features is that a lot of them don't really warrant a module on their own, because it feels like a parasite of a module, right? Like, an example is, I came up with a feature as I was first testing this out, testing out features. I came up with a feature called User Finder. So one of the things that I found to be frustrating about Drupal is that when you go to the user page, the listing of users, there's not like a place to do an autocomplete on the username or do a search for users by email address, you know. So you've got a user and you know that they're that user from, you know, harvard.edu. So can I see a list of users on my site from harvard.edu? And there's no way to do that in built into Drupal, but views can do it. And if you create a views with a view of users and expose some of the filters, and you probably want to put some permissions on it so that only site administrators can see it, you can actually create a tab right there on the user page. That's like a user finder, you know, find users, and you can, you know, do autocomplete by username and stuff like that. But it's not really a module, it's just a view. Like, it's not a module that I want to kind of put out there in the Drupal repository, like, you know, get issues like for and stuff like that. So the you know, we sort of have this again as sort of a new model with features of these sort of in between kinds of things. And again, the guys at Development Seed have been thinking about this as well, and have started thinking about the idea of a features server. And I'll just sort of put an asterisk next to that and say, you know, go search Google and find out more information about that, because it's a little bit kind of beyond the scope of this. But what is really nice is the ability to just go in and turn on and off, you know, features like that, or have it as part of your default install profile. I say, you know, I think Drupal should have this user finder feature, and so I want to create a profile, and whenever I install Drupal, I want it to have this, and I want to be able to go in and turn that on or turn it off. And features does that as well. So yeah. What else should we talk about the new site? We changed some stuff around. We built a couple of modules. We didn't do a whole lot of module, like coming up with like brand new big modules that we contributed back. We did some module improvements.
It was a couple patches that came out of some stuff we were doing with the front page, at least.
Yeah. So the Twitter block on the homepage is basically tweets that have been favorited by a certain account, by the Lullabot account, and those show up there. And so I think Jeff Eaton is working on rolling some of that functionality into the Twitter module. He initially just sort of wrote it as a standalone module. It's pretty simple to do with the Twitter API stuff. What other things? We're using Pressflow on the new site.
Yep, and Varnish.
These two kind of go hand in hand. If you're going to use Varnish, it's a good idea to use Pressflow.
Otherwise, Varnish won't work.
That's why it's a good idea. Want to explain what Varnish is?
So Varnish is a reverse proxy cache. It's basically...
I think that explains it. We can just...
Yeah. Yeah. Let's leave it on. So, that's kind of confusing, but...
Okay, reverse proxy cache.
What it does is it sits in front of Apache or, you know, whatever your web host is. 99% of Drupal guys are probably using Apache, and it's so what you essentially do is set up your server to that port 80, which normally maps to Apache. So by default, if you're just going to HTTP blah blah blah, you know, www.lullabot.com, behind the scenes, that server is everything's going through port 80, and so instead of Apache responding to port 80, you essentially set up Varnish to respond on port 80, and then Varnish behind the scenes will do a proxy through to a different port and talk to Apache. And so if you navigate to lullabot.com, your Varnish is saying, oh, this person wants this web page. Let me see if I've got it in my cache. And if it does, and it's not, you know, past a certain amount of time, you set up a time limit for how long each of those, each page of your site lives in the Varnish cache. If it's there, it just serves it straight from Varnish, and it never hits Apache, never hit, you know, PHP, none of that stuff. Like, it's just serving you HTML directly.
And out of memory? Serving out of memory? I think for the most part, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's for someone who understands more of it than I do. But this is just my.
They may understand it more, but they can't explain it as well.
So if it's not there, or if it's past, you know, like we have it set up to be a 10-minute cache. So if you know no one's hit the site in 10 minutes or hit that particular page in 10 minutes, it will pull in a fresh copy from Apache. You know, and so it just kind of passes through everything to Apache, and then you're seeing the Apache page, and then it stores all that back into the Varnish cache. So it's really, really cool for, you know, if you've got scalability concerns, or you know, if you just want your site to perform as fast as possible, it just will blow, you know, core Drupal and everything out of the water as far as response times and number of users that you can provide content to. So,
yeah, it's kind of a faster alternative even to Drupal's page caching mechanism. There's, you know, no Apache, no Drupal, no nothing, and it'll work for everything on the site, even if you have non Drupal content being delivered.
The reason you need Pressflow is because Drupal, what happens is any cookies that the site sets on your through your browser, if you have a cookie on the site, the Varnish will not provide content, because normally when you have a cookie, that means that the website needs to respond in some way to that cookie. For instance, a logged in user, you know, the session data for that logged in user is stored in a cookie. So with just core Drupal that you download from Drupal.org, there is a cookie for any anonymous user that's stored on your machine. So then essentially Varnish would never kick into gear and cache anything for you, because there's always a cookie there. So basically what Pressflow does is gets rid of that anonymous cookie there, so that it can serve up cached pages to anonymous users.
Right. Yeah. We could
get, among many other things.
I was going to say, we could get way into the weeds on this one.
if you want to just a quick, like, get your head around Varnish to play with it, Nate Haug, Quick Sketch, did an article on the ideas section about a month ago on if you're a Mac user, with step-by-step instructions to set up Varnish on your Mac to play around with it.
There you go. Yet more helpful information on the new lullabot.com site. we're also using Solr, Apache Solr, search engine.
That's a pretty easy setup right there, actually. I mean, if you have the hardware already set up, it's really easy to get it installed on Drupal, and it just makes your searching that much better. Drupal.org's using it, so
you just hit the better button.
I would like better searching.
Yes.
there's some really awesome things that are happening right now with search and like views backend type stuff. We're not using it on Drupal, so I won't go into it. But there's some really awesome stuff with Solr that you can do just to make your whole website faster as well. You know, not just the search stuff. So I would look up some of the views. Apache Solr integrations. It's pretty awesome.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Yeah, Solr has all sorts of kind of cool and crazy stuff where you can do faceted searching and stuff like that. That is stuff that we have in the pipeline for lullabot.com. We wanted to just kind of get it out the door with the new design. But one of the big focuses of the new site was, again, to kind of come up with better ways to sort of navigate through looking at lullabot.com as a library of content, all the different stuff that's been on there, and being able to find things by topic and find other sort of similar stuff. And Solr provides a bunch of stuff that kind of does that around searching, and even you know, adding it as a sidebar on a Node page and stuff like that. You can get some kind of cool things.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome just for navigational purposes. I mean, automatic navigational purposes.
What's the best way to navigate the internet? It's like, just go to the Google search box and type in what you want to find, and then kind of, you know, and I think that we're finding that all this work that we do trying to sort of categorize and you know, taxonomy and library sciences and stuff, it's really best to kind of just sort of take all of that information. I mean, that's important information, but to be able to sort of funnel it into a search engine so people can just kind of pivot through things through the more of a search kind of interface.
So we also upgraded our player on our website.
That was a new module, right?
Yeah, Quick Sketch wrote it.
So we our new website came out right around the same time that the iPad was coming out. and we all wanted excuses to get iPads, and we figured if we needed to test the new lullabot.com site on the iPad, that would be an excuse. And so of course, you know, in order to justify the purchase, we needed to make sure that the new site worked on the iPad.
And so we wanted an HTML5 player.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, moving away from Flash and just sort of testing that out and stuff. And what was it was an existing player that we found, right?
It's an existing player, but there wasn't actually like a module to integrate it with the file field, and that's basically what Nate created. So you can create a file field for your audio stuff and then use this module to present it in the J player. And it can be, the J player can be customized, I think through the module. I'm not sure. Jared Ponchot, didn't you customize the player?
We did some custom designing on it, just to tweak how it looked, yeah. But it was pretty much happyworm.com, I think, did JPlayer, which is what's being used.
Cool. And that sort of segues into some of the things that we had with the difficulties on the new site. was we launched the site forgetting, basically, we forgot how podcasts worked. It's like we just sort of we gotta have RSS feeds, that's it, you know. And so on the previously we'd been using the audio module, and I think that there was like an iTunes related module that was related to the audio module. It was sort of worked with the audio module, but basically the audio module handled podcasting and basically, for those of you who don't know exactly how this podcast may have gotten to you, if you're listening to it on iTunes or something like that, podcasts are an RSS enclosure. So basically there's an enclosure tag. An RSS feed is just a XML, special format XML file. Looks a little bit like HTML if you look at it. And there's an enclosure which links to where the file is that should be downloaded along with this thing. We were in a hurry, and it's all fine and good. But I think, you know, over time we'd kind of like done a lot of sort of like massaging of the RSS feeds and stuff. And the first thing that happened, for those of you who read the Drupal Planet, we apologize.
Whoopsie.
We launched the new site, and apparently, and maybe we could look at this as a Drupal bug, but I don't know who should take credit on this. But what happened? All of the indicators for like the RSS, like each RSS has a unique ID or something like that.
Basically, what happened is every node or every of our all of the video nodes somehow got an updated post date, and so. And any new content that was created or whatever, I think got an updated post date as well. So essentially, like this, the website just the Drupal Planet just completely got spammed.
So basically all of the content on the new site was brand new. And yeah. Please come check out our content and put it at the top of your listings, which happened to the Drupal Planet. And so for a moment there. Maybe a few hours, maybe a day. It was just all Lullabot content, and our humblest apologies for that. We yeah. got it sorted.
We'll
out.
Welcome your new Lullabot overlords.
But we were really excited about the new site.
Here's all of our content at once.
And then eventually we also got the enclosures to work. How did we end up doing that?
Silence.
Designer, answer that.
I honestly can't remember what the problem was with the. I think there was something just completely wrong with the podcast feeds, like that we weren't using a
file field wasn't automatically attaching. I think you know that's sort of a thing, and so you need this. I'm not sure if we're still using FFPC file field podcast.
Which, now we're using iTunes module, but yeah, we were at first using FFPC, and we just couldn't customize it the way we needed to for the actual in the iTunes store, and when you open up the iTunes app, you know, looking at the podcast in there, we just couldn't customize it the way we needed to, so right. We ended up switching to iTunes module.
Yeah, I think when it came down to it, we just got tired of messing with it, and we said, hey, here's an iTunes module. Let's see what this does. Yeah,
exactly. But, well, that's how Drupal development is a lot of times. It's, it's like knowing there's all these different modules out there. You kind of pick one of them that looks the best, and then there's a, you kind of mess with it, and there's a certain threshold where it's like, all right, I've messed with this enough. It's time to move on to the next module and see if that one works better, sooner, faster. And it's not necessarily the first one was bad. It just, it was past the amount of the, whatever the random threshold today was for how long I could figure out how to make this module work. So, and then once you find the modules, it's, it, you know, you add them to your palette. It's like, aha. And, it's, so it's nice on a podcast like this for people to be able to hear like, hey, we used the iTunes module and it worked. Add it to your list. We also did a bunch of rearranging the way that the paths work on the site, partly because the a lot of the context stuff was sort of path related, is that right? And and we wanted to have the paths also sort of relate to the sections of the site. So if you go, you know, go into ideas, so podcasts used to be at /podcasts and now they're at /ideas/podcasts. And so we had to do a bunch of rearranging there. Did most of that happen in the, at the Apache level?
No, we talked about doing that at first, just putting it all, you know, as 301 redirects, in the Apache config. But I think with just how quickly we wanted to get it out the door, we just ended up using path redirect module for the whole thing because it made it so much quicker.
It's certainly quicker, and we had path redirect because we were using that for other things in the past. I should check this before I say it, but I know, like, you know, kind of almost using it as a URL shortener. Of course, I open up my browser and then immediately hide it, so I can't check it here. Let's see. But it used to be www.lalabot.com/w redirected you. It still does. So if you call our phone number, there's a, you know, rather than reading out the whole URL, we just tell people, if you want to send a work inquiry, go to lalabot.com/w. And so we use it sort of as a kind of a long URL shortener. It is what path redirects is kind of acting as that functionality on the site. And so we already had it in there. I wrote the original implementation of that module way back just for this particular thing. Handy dandy. What else? Yeah, we have recently made the decision to let me start it this way. I tweeted out yesterday from the Lullabot account saying, "Hey, we're going to do a podcast about lullabot.com. Does anybody have any questions?" And we got a question from someone asking, "How about your approach to Drupal and SVN?" And the funny thing is that recently, we've decided to move the lullabot.com project from SVN to Git. So you guys want to talk about that sort of revision control stuff, and in particular, SVN versus Git as it relates to the project?
Yeah, I think the big challenge we ran into on this project is having so many different developers that were coming in and out and working on stuff, because, you know, one of the challenges of working that way is that, you know, kind of this cross-commit problem of, you know, someone may be working on the same feature at the same time as someone else is, and you've essentially overwritten what someone else did, or, you know, just doesn't, SVN doesn't handle merging as well as Git does. And, you know, with having Jared Bittner on the team now to actually kind of like handhold us as we all learned Git was really helpful, and was like, you know what, we just need to do this because the way that Git branches work, they're just so easy to create a new branch. So we're trying to get into this way of working where anytime someone is working kind of like on a larger chunk of functionality, you know, they need to create a branch, and then when that functionality is done, that they can commit that back into the main master branch, in the Git repository. And then that'll go directly to the staging server for us to kind of all look at it and click on it and stuff like that. Because we were running into this problem where, you know, if we're all working on, we had a, you know, a Lullabot module in there, and there's a, in the Lullabot.install that we had all our different update functions. And if someone was working on one particular update function and another person was working on another one, you know, you couldn't actually like push it live and test it out because you'd end up breaking the staging server. And so
we ended
this
up talking to each other and like claiming a namespace for an update hook.
Yeah.
I got 6015.
Yeah. So there was a lot of communication that had to happen throughout the whole thing of just like, you know, like Jared was mentioning, but just switching over to Git has made that so much easier to, okay, I'm going to work on this update function and I'm going to start my own branch and I'm going to work on it. And once it's done, then I'll merge it back into master.
Yeah.
Actually,
the whole Git, it's very branchy. it feels like wibbly wobbly to me in that way. It's like, oh, I'm making all these branches. Where am I and stuff? It's a thing. I'm still getting used to it, but I'm looking forward to the opportunities it affords.
It really is something to get used to too, because I mean, it's a Subversion. They tell you to branch, and you should branch for major development changes. But it's
if
so
you can figure it out.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like. Well, you can figure out how to branch, but number one, that branch is just basically a copy. You've just copied all of those files and doubled your the size of your repository. And then actually getting any of those changes merged back into the trunk is a freaking nightmare. I mean, the Red Bean book itself says when you go to merge this back in, it's a headache. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. And Git, it's basically when you create a branch, it's just a diff. You have a small little diff. And so when you do go to do your merge, it's a very quick and short and painless process. So it's much easier to just do it often and do it a lot, and just it's so much cleaner.
and it's worth mentioning that you, Jared Bittner, have kind of become the Git guy at Lullabot, at least. And you have a couple of articles up on lullabot.com about Git as well. So as we're getting our way through Git, Jared's
get
been,
it?
Get it. He's been doing some documentation and putting them up on lullabot.com, so there may be more of that even in the future. And it's worth noting also, Drupal.org is moving to Git as well, from CVS, making the jumping over SVN altogether.
I
mean,
They wanted to convert to SVN at one point, and then it just never happened. And now Git's out, and it's been argued that it's even better. So just bypass Subversion altogether.
So to answer the question about Drupal and SVN, I guess we would just say that's so 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but as of 2 weeks ago, SVN was serving us quite well. SVN, again, short for Subversion, Subversion. See, version control. But we're kind of moving towards Git now. We'll see how that goes. Can you have two? One of the nice things about Drupal, the Drupal repositories being in CVS, was it was possible to check things out of Drupal CVS and then check them into a different repository with SVN, and these two things would never sort. You could do a CVS update here or there or whatever, and it would always pull from Drupal.org. Whereas an SVN update would, and if we have Git on Drupal.org and Git in our project, are we going to have issues of different Gits? Maybe not.
Not too much, because actually, well, so there's a way that's kind of similar. It's called submodules. So Git has a idea of submodules, kind of like Subversion has something called SVN externals. So you can You're going to plug in an external subversion repository into an existing repository, and that's essentially what you're talking about, is putting a Git repository into another one. And it basically just takes a snapshot of a certain point in your other repository and says, this is the version that we're including in your whatever you're including it in. And you can update it and work with it just like SVN externals. So it's there's a way to do it that way. It's a little bit more of a pain in the butt because there's a couple extra commands you have to know and use. But also, with Drush coming about, there's not a whole lot of reason to do an actual checkout. Like how we usually check out something from CVS and put it into Subversion. I've actually moved away from that a lot just because Drush makes things so easy to update a module that I just haven't used the CVS commands that much anymore. So
yeah, that's it. That's interesting. Drush, for people that don't know, stands for Drupal Shell, and it's basically a command line utility for doing Drupal stuff, including checking out, downloading modules, updating modules, and you can even, there are plugins for it that do things like updating features. You know, if you go in and create a feature for a view and then you go in and change the view in code, you can use Drush to update the feature and stuff like that. So,
The really nice thing about that is James just submitted a patch for features Drush integration, which is really great.
Can we talk about that?
Sure. We can provide a link to the patch.
Is this controversial in some way?
Not really.
I just created some short aliases for some of the Drush features commands, because before you had to type out Drush features update all the way out, and I wanted to just be able to type Drush FU.
It is. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, and there's actually a new command, the features. Features update all, which is in the new
version
of features. So, now there's a shortened version of that too, which is the Drush FU all.
Nice. I tend to use FUA myself.
Yeah. It is even shorter.
Can we do a Drush WTF? Yeah, that was
someone actually suggested that in the comments, I think, was the instead of Drush status, you could have Drush WTF.
I like it. It's open source. We can do whatever we want.
That's right.
That question, incidentally, that we just went off for 15 minutes on was from Twitter user Gizmoko. And another question from Twitter here. Twitter user Iztok, I-Z-T-O-K, says, you did a great job on the web design. Do you have any plans for a logo, too? For redesigning the logo, I guess. We actually did do sort of a logo refresh, redesign. The old logo had a black line around it, and we kind of darkened it up a little bit and removed the outline because it didn't scale very well in the old style. So
when was that done?
About a year ago, something like that. Okay. The stickers still have the old logo on them. They're cute. Mm-hmm. I'd like it both ways, but
I'm wearing a shirt right now with the old logo.
Yeah, it's a minor change. This is kind of the new logo.
I think Jared Ponchot's got some ideas though.
Yeah, no, we're open to ideas.
There's a lot of the Lullabot brand is a fairly pervasive brand in the Drupal ecosphere, and the little robot, I've continued to find, like, in conversations I've had with people, like, it has this kind of kitschy cool factor to it that I'm like nervous to ever mess with it because there's just a lot of love for that little robot,
That's true.
He's sleeping and smiling.
Maybe someday we'll tiptoe towards some kind of process.
Slowly morph it over time.
Freshening it.
Like Aunt Jemima.
Right. Just like Aunt Jemima. Actually, I was thinking about an apron like that.
Aunt Jemima. Aunt Jemima logo is, well, the Aunt Jemima character has changed over time. Yeah. Look it up on Google, folks.
Yeah.
Beyond the scope of this podcast. Another question. Let's see. Any new modules contributed? Mark Jarrell asks, any new modules contributed as a result of the relaunch? Question mark. Did I sound like I was asking a question? Or big changes to existing modules? Question mark. Did we cover that? We covered that a little
bit. I think
we
pretty much covered that, yeah.
Other questions here. Let's see. Is the new Lullabot website, this is Thomas Minitsios. Thomas Minitsios asks, is the new Lullabot website in Drupal 6 finally? And by the way, you owe us a video. Yeah, we do owe a video. I think the last video on the site is from November. Talk to Addie. Addie's the video queen. And yes, the new website is in Drupal 6. And the joke, of course, is that the new website is in Drupal 6 just in time for Drupal 7 to come out. There's a website. Where's the Drupal 7?
Give us another 3 years. We'll have it updated to Drupal 7 and a new logo.
Have you guys seen this? This is kind of late in the podcast for this. But, you know, for those of you who have stuck around an hour and 15 minutes or whatever into the podcast, new website just came out called Drupal7releasedate.com. And this folks at Activism Labs have put together this little website, which basically, based on the number of open bugs and sort of tracking the trend, you can see a little graph. If you click the little graph it thing, it's really cool. You can see the trend. And basically, when we get down to zero bugs, will be the release date. And so they're saying, and we used to do this just, you know, for fun on the podcast, try and predict the date. But according to this much more scientific method, August 10th will be the Drupal 7 release date. So that's still June, July. It's still a couple of months away. I'm happy to say that we got our Drupal 6 site out, you know.
I didn't know there was a website. I'd been following an issue queue. There's an issue queue where somebody kept posting a little graphic, and the issue queue just ended up getting so long that he stopped posting graphics because it would take so long for the page to load. maybe that's why they came up with this.
Anyways, it's fun. People ask, when's Drupal 7 coming out? You send them here. And of course, it's got helpful and handy links to how you can help get Drupal 7 to come out on that date, if not sooner, by helping in the issue queue. All right, well, let's wrap up that podcast and say hooray. Thanks for coming
on the
new podcast, new guys. Hopefully people found that to be helpful and interesting and not too self-indulgent. We're going to talk about our stuff for a podcast. Oh, well, it's our podcast. We can do what we want.
Hopefully we went over enough technical details that somebody will get something out of
it. Yes, goodness. All right. Well, anyways, thanks again. And we will see you all on the next podcast. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.